Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this, in the spirit of the OnlyFans, the matters of the 20th and 21st Healthy Ad Show. Because, Rick, I will tell you, I submit that there is no game to jumping in a swimming pool and running as fast as you can.
Well, you can't run as fast as you can.
Swimming as fast as you can, you're right. Or running down a track and jumping over things, that's not a game. That's a competition. There's nothing gamey about it. It's not like you get to roll the dice again or anything.
You don't enjoy that? You don't call your friends up on a Friday night and say, hey, guys, let's run a 100-meter dash.
Right. Those are the games of the Olympiad. Why aren't they the Olympic Games? I don't know. They're the games of the Olympiad, and there needs to be some type of theme music to that because that's so pompous. With me from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, to talk to you about our website, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. That's Moorhead State Public Radio's website. We keep all the more recent shows listed there under Health Matters. You got to do a little searching in the menu to find it. And if you by chance want to look at some of those other shows on there, we certainly won't be upset with you, because it is, after all, our sister shows, right? Are they brother shows or are they sister shows? What are
sister,
they, Tony?
Sister shows. I love it.
Are they
our sister shows, yes.
Sister shows. Yeah, there's something like that.
You can't be brothers. You ever notice that? We got sister cities. And
exactly.
Yeah, there's no brothers to this. Brothers apparently just fight.
Right.
So if Russia is our brother country.
Well, I mean, and you know, and who really wants to pick on a time for tails, right? I mean, come on. Do you really? I mean, is that even? I don't know. Sorry, Carol. So, audio of the shows, WMKY.org. At some point, though, our show just screams interaction, right?
It just screams interaction.
Our show
definitely screams.
Either you want to scream at us or we scream at you, something. You can do that on Facebook. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. There you will find a fan page devoted to Health Matters. Yes, we set it up. Yes, we're pretentious. Yes, we're like that. We want to see you comment. We want to tell everybody, look how many hits we got. But we do actually go out there and check it. Leave some feedback. Leave comments. You know, if there's a show topic you're interested in, or maybe there's a question you have, and then we're not going to cure, you know, your disease on there or anything, but we certainly may give you a little bit of a laugh or possibly even some good information, or it has been known to get Tony's attention, and then next thing you know, it shows up as in either as a title or in a show. So
right.
If you want to get it in front of us, the Facebook.com/HM Radio Show is your way.
Our sponsor for today's show, a Zika update. The CDC, they wish to speak. Avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. That's right. We are talking about the Zika virus because we are talking about the Rio Olympics. August 5th, this came from Medscape, actually. Five things to know that Zika is in the United States. Now, the fifth one was that they had more information, and I didn't like that. So I took four of the five, and then I added some other information from the CDC, guidance from the CDC. But we're going to do the four the first time. First of all, as of August 5th, the number of patients in the United States who are infected with the Zika virus is growing. Florida Department of Health announced on July 29th, four people in Miami tested positive for Zika, and they likely acquired it through mosquito bites locally. The count has risen since then to 14 people. That's in the Miami area. Overall, including people who have traveled outside the United States, there are now nearly 1,700 total cases of Zika in the United States. That is 1,700 people who, if they get bitten by a mosquito, will in fact start their own Zika zone in their neighborhood. So that's why we do recommend, even after a person comes back from travel in Central or South America, to continue to use mosquito repellents, because you do not want to set up your own Zika hotspot in your neighborhood. U.S. military and their families, 41 military members, including one pregnant woman, have been infected while overseas as of August 3rd. Fun fact number two, the domestic travel ban only includes a 1 mile area within Miami. This is fascinating. There is somewhere in Miami sort of a Jason Bourne of mosquitoes. Mosquitoes do not fly more than 150 meters in their lifetime. Basically, you could a an area of around 4 football fields. That's as far as this mosquito would fly in its entire life. And yet, there have been 14 people who have visited this mosquito's biting grounds and are now Zika positive, believed to be as a result of Zika transmission in Florida. But the domestic travel ban, the first domestic travel ban for the continental United States, the first time this has ever happened, was for pregnant women avoiding all non-essential travel to a one-mile area of active transmission north of downtown Miami. Now, I will tell you, again, this was this is the one where we now have documentation of transmission. I am not in Florida. I am not with the Florida Department of Tourism. I will tell you that I think all along the Gulf Coast, there is a possibility for infection. I would use mosquito repellents if I were pregnant. At this point, I believe I would avoid that area. Fun fact number 3, testing is available for any patient who requests it. It can detect the test can detect Zika RNA in blood and urine samples for up to 2 weeks after the symptoms start. The CDC, listen to this. The CDC recommends all pregnant women be tested for infection at each prenatal care visit. Every visit you visit a doctor for your pregnancy care, they recommend you be tested if you live in an active transmission area or if your sexual partner has traveled to one. So if you are either in an area of transmission or your partner has traveled to an area of transmission, they recommend testing at each visit for Zika virus. It can take weeks or longer to get test results back, but there is a new test, a new version of the test, which should speed things up and also broaden testing capacity. That is our first 4 fun facts about Zika. More in the next fractional portion. The sponsor, the Zika update of the CDC, wishes to speak of, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. Now, Rick, the Olympics. You've been watching. I know you have.
I have.
I have been watching some. It has been raining, and my rooftop TV antenna, low-tech that it is, sometimes shorts out when it rains, and so I see it sometimes and sometimes I don't. I'm reaching deep into the past to our own Health Matters Olympic moment, Dot Richardson. Dot Richardson, she was born September 1961, Orlando, Florida. Former international softball player, played on the U.S. Olympic team, hit the first softball home run in Olympic history. 2 gold medals, the 1996 Atlanta team, the 2000 Sydney team. She is an orthopedic surgeon. And she went to the University of Louisville School of Medicine. So there is your Olympic medical Kentucky connection. You are welcome. I remember Dot Richardson.
Do you?
Shortstop, I believe. She was quite an NCAA player. MVP in the women's major fast pitch national championship 4 times. Inductee of the National Softball Hall of Fame. And some good memories back from the Olympics. Of course, they've canceled women's softball. It is no longer an Olympic sport. It has been supplanted by others, some of which are from the X Games. What is worse than death?
The show.
It's like I'm just waiting, and Rick and I did not script this, but I have penciled in. Rick is supposed to say this show, because you're absolutely right. I said, what is worse than death? Well, one thing that's worse
than death. You
know
what's worse than that?
What's that?
Listening to 2 back to back.
This was widely reported, and I think misreported. There was a study in the American Medical Association Journal of Internal Medicine. This was back on August 5th, and it came from the University of Pennsylvania. And it's kind of complicated. They call it a prospective cohort study, and I don't quite get that, I'll be honest. Cohort studies are usually studies that follow people with and without a characteristic to see how things turn out. They had 180 patients in the study. These were people with serious illnesses, and this is what you need to know. They had serious illnesses. We are talking about cancers. We're talking about lymphomas, leukemias, class 3 or 4 heart failure, meaning that they had a limited life expectancy from heart failure, or severe lung disease, and again, a limited life expectancy. So these were people who were close to the end of their life anyway, and they said, well, here's some health states, here's some symptoms, here's some things that have specific debilities, and would you rather have these things? Are these things worse than death? The first one, bowel and bladder incontinence. 55% of these extremely ill people said bowel and bladder incontinence were worse than death. Now, they didn't have bowel and bladder incontinence, but they imagined not being able to control your bowel or your bladder would be worse than dying if you had this chronic illness.
Could you see that?
I think if you got to the point
Is this before they created Depends? I mean,
this was the study was actually just reported, and so it is with Depends. But it is a study of people who are close to dying anyway. And so I think they're asking themselves at this point, what would it take for me to want to continue living with this severe chronic illness? And it's a bit debilitating. Chronic obstructive lung disease and heart disease often interfere with breathing and make you short of breath constantly. Of course, cancers cause pain. And so these were people who were not enjoying life anyway. Add in bowel and bladder incontinence, 55% said that's worse than death. Relying on a breathing machine, 52% said that was worse than death. Cannot get out of bed, you're down to 50% said it's worse. If you do worse than or the same as dying, you're up to about two-thirds of them felt like not being able to get out of bed would be either worse than or the same as death. Confused all the time. This is discouraging to me because 46% of these people said being confused all the time is worse than death. And my problem is, Rick, as you know, I'm pretty much confused all the time.
Yeah, but you don't know it.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you think you're right, but really you're confused.
I'm not.
See what I'm getting at?
Right.
See, I'm proving my point right here.
But here's the thing. I am happily confused. And I think
you didn't
right
take
now,
the study.
I'm the host of a radio show, and we're on the radio. This is working for me.
But are you?
I know.
The question is are you really?
And does it matter? Because if I, and this is something.
And would you rather be dead?
In all You know, if you're confused, maybe you would, because after all, you know, being dead's not that bad. I don't know, honestly, but I will tell you, you know, I see people all the time that say, well, Alzheimer's disease is the worst thing. And, you know, I have a chance to see a lot of people go through a lot of conditions.
Right.
And I will tell you, it's really tough on the family, but as far as the patient goes, it is not, in my mind, the worst thing. But these people, again, two-thirds of them said, well, gee, being confused all the time, 58% of them said being confused all the time is either as bad as or worse than dying if you have a chronic illness. And I think that's odd. Relying on a feeding tube to live, 35% said that's worse than death, and about 55% said it's either as bad as or worse than death. And I don't know what you mean as bad as death, because you can't really have an either or there. I will tell you, you know, there are a few conditions that rely on a feeding tube. The medical people are not too high on feeding tubes either. They carry a lot of complications, and we're not fond of them.
Well, aren't they just, I mean, really, when they're required all the time, I mean, it, I don't know, there's something about having to finish out your life without the ability to eat. Right.
Yeah.
That does, you're right, seems to take the edge off of life a little bit.
When you think about joy, you know, sexual right. relations, the ability to get out and experience right. new things, conversations with friends, being free of pain, and eating, those are all things that reinforce our daily joy. If you lose all those things and you're searching for when you're going to have joy in your day, then you're in pretty serious trouble. Need care all the time, 35%. And my mother would be this way. She said, oh, if I need care, I should just go ahead. She does not have any of these terminal illness.
I just went to visit my stepmother, and she was the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
She would not want to be cared for.
She would, in fact, rather wander off. I mean, we have been given leeway to take chances with my mother because she does not want to be in a position where she winds up relying on somebody else. She would, in fact, rather take her chances at home, even if she's not able to care for herself well. Moderate pain all the time, actually only about 5%. Thought that was worse than death. I'll tell you what's not worse than death: taking a break and refreshing yourself. It is time to do that. We're going to take a break. You should too. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We have named this show the Matters of the 20th and 21st Healthy Ed Show because this will air originally August 20th and 21st, and that sounds just pompous enough to go along with the games of the whatever it is Olympiad Show.
What's your favorite game so far? The only one you've watched?
No, the signal calms down enough. I can usually get the beach volleyball.
That's a good excuse. I like that one. I'm gonna try that one at home. Right, hey, honey, the reception's good enough that I was able to watch this beach volleyball.
It brings up 2 points. One is I like beach volleyball, but not why you think. keep in mind, I have a very blurry TV set, so it doesn't really do any good. But the reason I think that is I play volleyball. I don't have any friends, so I play volleyball by myself.
Right.
And so the fact
do you wear those same shorts?
That two people can actually play a legitimate volleyball game gives me hope because I will never have enough friends to make a whole volleyball team.
I've never understood how two people, how you can I mean, how they can't slam the ball into a place where there's somebody isn't, because two people shouldn't be able to cover that much ground.
Oh, all we got to do is just serve it over the net, and it's a point. Because two people, you're right, can't possibly cover it. It does bring up a point, though, Rick. Now, follow me through. This is a theoretical exercise. Let's say, and you got to be all in on this. Let's say you're a fan of the Carolina Panthers NFL franchise.
I'm not.
I know you're not. Okay. But let's say you are.
And you've got another team.
All right. If you want.
I don't like Cam Newton.
Okay. Well, then it's going to fall apart. So pick your team.
Okay. Right. I'll humor you and pretend that I actually
Carolina
like
Panthers.
The guy.
And let's say
like.
You get tickets. You've got tickets to the game. You need to buy some merchandise.
Right.
And what is the first thing you're going to buy to take to a Carolina Panthers football game?
I'm supposed to buy the quarterback's jersey.
You're going
to
buy Cam Newton's jersey. All right. Now,
I would only buy it because it has a one on it.
Let's follow that through. Let's say you are a fan, and this is going to sound creepy, but you're a fan of women's Olympic sport. Okay. So you're going to buy the outfit.
Oh, no, I'm not.
I know. You see where I'm going with this.
Oh, I'm not.
This, it just hit me, and especially because beach volleyball is pretty much the only venue we can get on our TV, how the women's costumes, if you look at just about everything. Oh, the swimming venues, that's already off. I mean, we're not going to buy women's swimsuits. We're not certainly not going to buy beach volleyball. We're not going to buy gymnastics.
Honestly, I hope you don't buy the men's swimsuits.
Track and field. You look at it. The lack of merchandising. You know, it is stunning.
Hey, you know
how
what they
little
got
merchandising you can do.
The new games this year. Golf.
Golf.
You can get you a golf shirt.
A golf shirt or a soccer shirt are still fair game for a person like me. But of the games that we have had so far, I mean, track and field. None of those outfits.
You could do ping pong.
I might be able to get a ping pong shirt to support the Olympic ping pong team. But it's come at my age. I realize I can't even merchandise most of the sports I'm watching on TV.
I'm pretty sure
the women's.
The cyclists wear yoga pants, so I mean, you could get you a good pair of yoga pants.
You see how hard it is to be a fan. Whereas if you're a football fan, it doesn't matter what shape you're in, you can buy a tent with Cam Newton's number on it.
Right.
And so that was the thing that struck me about it so far.
I'd rather buy one with Peyton Manning, even though he's retired, or Brett Favre because he's retired, or somebody. Cam Newton's not exactly my idea of a role model.
I don't know when to stop when I say Brett Favre's name. That's my whole problem. It's a strange name. Back to our show.
Well, but come on. The Olympics only happen once every 4 years, and let's be honest. Okay, we don't count.
It's not a political show, so please,
yeah,
humorous
here. So, you know, we can talk about the Olympics and you know.
Our sponsor.
At some point, Tony, we probably ought to go through all the Olympic injuries that occurred. I mean, that's a health thing. There's been some pretty, I mean, I would like to see the Rio Olympics compared to previous Olympics from an injury standpoint, because I believe that the athletes down there are dealing with less than, you know, subpar conditions. I mean,
really?
You know, Zika is all around, and then you know they're doing cycling in a rainforest. Really?
So you think that's
60 miles an hour on a bike in the rain? That sounds good.
Okay, but the gymnastics injury was indoor. I mean, the guy just slammed into the vault.
Well,
right?
But it's gymnastics, Tony.
Yeah, I know. Ain't wearing that outfit either. Just saying, of the merchandise.
I don't care what you wear. Yeah. I want to see you on the pommel horse.
Listen, well, I could, you know, you think about it.
It's better than the rings.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can do the pommel horse. I can climb up there and roll around for 5 minutes.
I want to see you on the rings, man.
Next up, the CDC update. The CDC, they wish to speak of avoid mosquitoes. Don't get Zika. And let's go with this CDC guidance. Again, this is from the CDC. This guidance as of August 10. All pregnant women should be evaluated for possible Zika virus exposure at each prenatal visit. All pregnant women, each prenatal visit, should be evaluated for exposure. They should avoid travel to areas with active Zika virus transmission. That includes the area, the 1 mile area north of Miami. And being honest, I think it is somewhat risky to look at the Gulf Coast anywhere at this point. And that's the Health Matters version of this, although that is not good for tourism in the Gulf Coast. And we may hear from somebody about that. But nonetheless, if I or someone, I won't be pregnant, if someone I love, that doesn't work either. If I know someone who is pregnant, I recommend that they avoid travel to the Gulf Coast at this point, and certainly that they avoid mosquitoes at all costs. From the CDC, the second thing, asymptomatic women, women with no symptoms who have an ongoing risk for Zika exposure, routine care should include first and second trimester Zika blood testing. And the thing about the third semester, the chance, third third trimester, sorry, the chance of something bad happening to the baby is much less. But the first and second have horrific congenital deformities associated with them. So they recommend if you have an ongoing risk that you are tested repeatedly if you are pregnant. You should be evaluated. That is, they should ask you, have you been to these areas? Have you been sexually active with anybody who has been to these areas? And they should do that every prenatal visit. Also from the CDC, pregnant women whose sex partner has traveled to or lives in such an area should abstain from sex, any type of sexual intercourse, or other activities potentially exposing to genital secretions, or use condoms throughout pregnancy. If you are pregnant and your partner goes to a Zika area, stop having sex with that person or use barrier methods. That extends also to pregnant women with female sex partners. It is just the potential for this virus infecting you from your sexual partner is quite high. Couples who are not pregnant who are planning pregnancy should consider, again, either abstinence or barrier methods for at least 6 months if the man becomes infected with Zika, 8 weeks if the woman becomes infected with Zika. Those in areas without active Zika transmission but one partner's traveled should consider barrier methods or abstinence for at least 8 weeks after that partner has left. So Zika is not a simply, I'm home, honey, the threat has ended. In fact, they are talking about 8 weeks of either abstinence or 8 weeks of barrier methods because you do not want to spread this to your potentially pregnant partner or your partner who might become pregnant. That is the CDC guidance on Zika. The CDC, they wish to speak, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. This amused me, and so, Rick, I'm going to bring it here and I'm going to laugh at it with you. McGill University News. This was July 27th, and it was published in a journal called NeuroImage, not a leading medical journal, but again, it's a journal for radiologists. You know, Rick, we have problems with remembering details, location of objects. I have lost a pair of vice grips, and I can't blame it on the kids because none of them are even in the state of Kentucky right now, but I've lost them. I bought a new pair of vice grips hoping to lure the old pair of vice grips out of hiding, but so far that has not worked. Where did I put them? I have no idea, and that starts happening in the 40s, so you might want to pay attention to where you put things now because that's going to get you too. McGill University, they had 112 healthy adults ages 19 to 76 years old. They were shown a series of faces, and they were supposed to recall where a face appeared on the screen, left or right side, and when it appeared. They had to rank them chronologically when they appeared on the screen and tell whether they were on the left side or the right side. And they did this. They had them do this while they were in an MRI scanner watching. It's called functional MRI. They were watching what part of the brain lit up. Now, you take these young people, which I'm not particularly fond of young people anymore because they annoy me, but the young adults, they activated their visual cortex while they were thinking about these pictures. They go to their visual cortex and they say, all right, where did I see this face, left or right, when did I see it, first or second, and they're using their visual cortex. You can see the MRI scan lighting up in the visual cortex. They're really paying attention to details to make the decision. Middle-aged guys like me, they didn't show the visual cortex activation, and you'll love this, Rick. Instead, their medial prefrontal cortex was activated. That's the part of the brain involved with information having to do with your own life and introspection. So basically what happens then in research, this is Weaver's interpretation here, they show you a series of pictures and say, all right, when did these pictures happen, and were they on the left or the right-hand side of the screen? And I'm going, I need to pee. I don't know if I can finish this without, I think I probably need to pee. This reminds me, I've had this before when I was doing a test, and it didn't turn out very well at all.
And this is why we have breaks in the show. You have now let the entire listening audience know why we have to take two breaks every hour.
So the functional MRI scan shows that these guys, they're thinking about themselves. You show them a test, and they're going, you know, I wonder where those vice grips are. It's just great. This is scientific confirmation of exactly what I know about myself and I remember about my father. It was the same thing, you know. He just kind of wander off. Even though the middle-aged and older participants did perform as well as the younger ones, that goes without saying, it may be wrong to regard this as brain impairment. This may be, I'm quoting, this may not be a deficit in brain function per se, but reflects changes in what adults deem important information as they age. Okay, I'm a part of a research project. I'm supposed to look at these pictures. You know, I'm hungry. I wonder when they're going to feed us. This is the way the old people approach projects. Middle-aged and older participants.
But this isn't startling news.
Well, I guess what happens is the young people are still competitive. I've got to get these pictures ranked. And the old guys go, ah. You know, I need to change the oil. It's that sort of thing. But
isn't that what life has basically taught you? Is that, I mean, I look at my dad now and go, yep, that's right. I see that.
Yeah, it's just like, well, this is not important. I don't know this picture. I don't know this guy. It was some guy. He was on the left side or the
right
side.
When's my tea time?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's, yeah, you know, I need to get that wedge. I need to get that thing fixed. It's a little bit bent, you know.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, every time you start talking over there, I go down that path.
Rick is practicing being an old man. I don't know. I'm sorry. I thought that was funny because it's not that there's something wrong with my brain. It's just that I don't care about doing cognitive tests anymore or remembering where my vice grips are or remembering what your name is.
Yeah.
Buckaroo.
And you know, the one thing is, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. I don't care either. So that's why we get along so well. This up, I believe I got this... I don't know where I got this one. I'm sorry, I don't have a source on this one, but I promise it's true. Android phones. Google Europe blog. They announced that's where they got it from, the Google Europe blog. Google announced that they have a new emergency location service feature in Android. It will send their location automatically when you dial 911. Now here's the thing, Rick, and you know this very well. If you call from a landline, and for our radio fans that don't know that, telephones used to be attached to the wall.
Yeah, yeah. There used to be such a thing as a wired phone.
Right, and that's called a landline. And frankly, your location could be identified immediately because there's a physical address. That phone only lives in one place.
Right. There's two pieces of copper that go out to your house that make that thing ring.
Now, if you dial 911 from a mobile phone, you have to tell people where you are.
No, you don't.
Well, you have to tell emergency services where you are because emergency service doesn't have access to the information in the phone.
No, you're incorrect, Tony.
All right, you tell me. This is why I wanted to do this in front of you, because I want to explain this. Let me just say...
Now, it does depend on the caliber and quality of the 911 system, but they actually have the ability now to what we call geofence, and so they can actually look at where you are on your phone when you call and actually determine which PSAP, Public Safety Answering Point, a.k.a. 911, you can actually geofence PSAPs based on your actual location that you make the call.
Now, and they could figure out what block you're on.
Exactly.
They could dispatch.
Absolutely.
Them. Okay.
Your
so
location
all you gotta
can
do
go
is,
along with them.
So this is me. This is vice grip for getting me. I yell the phone. I yell something at it. I go, I need to pee. And if I dial 911 and do that, they will know where I am.
In certain. It depends on the – obviously, each PSAP has different – categories or levels. And you remember we went through a 10 or 15 years ago, you had this whole E911.
Right.
Well, that's enhanced, right? And so that was to enhance the data that the 911 carriers get along with the call. And so, yeah, they do get good location services. And in the more modern systems, they actually can get coordinates. But, you know, it still is not real common. Most of the stuff, it's an address lookup. So they go out and look at the number. They see the number in a system, and the system says, what's the address for that? And then they do it. But
Google has an emergency location service, sends the GPS location directly to emergency services.
Absolutely.
When you make the call. And this is, by the way, this is not currently available in England and Estonia. And for some reason, Estonia is a really technological marvel in these sort of things. And again, I think the problem is, I'll agree with Rick about the enhanced 911, but the problem is there is a real fragmented system in the U.S. Some places have it, some don't. So Google is trying to end run that. But Rick, locally, here in Eastern Kentucky, that is...
Not available. Not consistently.
Okay.
Now, at UK, we have a PSAP, right? So, you know, I've had some experience with working with the PSAP vendors and dealing with how the equipment works. And it's pretty impressive technology on how they do it. And if you think about it, Tony, at UK... We have, you have, you know, you're speaking to cellular, right? But there's this new modern invention called VoIP, voice over IP, right? So, you know, people get it at home with Vonage. I don't know if you've noticed, a lot of the carriers are rolling out things on your cell phone called Wi-Fi calling, okay? What that does is it basically makes your phone VoIP, right? Voice over IP. So at UK, we've got over 16,000 VoIP phones. And a VoIP phone, if you plug it into a data jack, it boots up and becomes a phone. And if you unplug it from the data jack and you take it to a different data jack, guess what? It becomes a phone. But now it's not in the same location. So it has the exact same problems that cellular has, right? You never know where it is, or if you don't actually register the address change with the number, then you'll never know. So we built, you know, we didn't build, but we bought systems and implemented them on campus such that when you move that phone and you take it to a different building, we can identify where that phone is and how to get emergency services to that zone. So it's pretty cool.
Well, this Google is the idea is when you dial 911.
It's the exact same service.
Yeah, it shoots a package to the emergency services, says here's the GPS coordinates. And the nice thing about it is according to Google, it bypasses Google. That is, they're not going to send you an ad. Go, hey, how would you like some bandages?
We see that you need bandages.
Hey, here's some bandage.
Would you like a leg splint
near
with that?
You? But truthfully, they apparently that will not trigger the ads or anything like that, but it'll go through. Now it's going to take a long time to get done here, and obviously we're approaching it from several different angles. But it still is a problem to be addressed. Thought that was an interesting piece of technology.
Tony, the Wi-Fi calling is going to really. Matter of fact, AT&T, who I've been very frustrated with for rolling it out slowly, right? They've rolled it out much slower than the other vendors. But what people aren't talking about is AT&T has complied with federal law more so than a T-Mobile or a Sprint or a Verizon. They released their Wi-Fi calling out, and they kind of used some gray area in the way that the 911 location services are set up for TTL, so, you know, disability, you know, and so they kind of skirted some of that gray area, and they rolled it out a long time ago. And so all those customers are like, hey, I got Wi-Fi calling. And if you don't know Wi-Fi calling, all right, if you don't understand what that is, if your home has decent internet and you have Wi-Fi in your house, right, if you have no cell service, you can turn on Wi-Fi calling, and the phone will essentially connect through your Wi-Fi or through public Wi-Fi at Starbucks, wherever. And if it gets a better signal than it can get with the cellular service, then it'll connect via that mechanism. You can get text, voice, you know, your phone basically looks like it's connected to the carrier, but it's really going through the Wi-Fi. So what does that mean? How many people have ever been in a basement or the hospital and your reception for your cell phone is just terrible, right? But if you can connect to a Wi-Fi network, now all of a sudden your reception becomes perfect. And so it's going to be revolutionary in how it changes our cell phone service and our lack of coverage.
And AT&T is late, but AT&T has done it in your mind
I think they're doing a good job, and they've rolled out far less models than everybody else, but it's coming. If you don't have it, look for it.
Go check your phone and your Wi-Fi service during the break. We're going to take a break and come back with
our bet you're going to take a break.
Third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Welcome back. Tony, you feel better? I'm Rick Phillips. You're listening to Health Matters.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
Boy, you look relieved.
This is the Matters of the 20th and 21st Healthy Ed Show. Needless to say, I should not discuss my bowel and bladder function over the radio. We will correct that in the upcoming shows. Our sponsor for the final time, Zika Update, the CDC, they wish to speak of. Avoid mosquitoes, don't get Zika. First of all, from the Medscape, just a reminder that Zika is now being transmitted on the continental United States. We knew this would happen. We do not believe we will be able to contain it. It would be very difficult to do so, especially as people travel to and from Central South America and come back and infect our mosquitoes, which then infects an area. The number of patients in the U.S. who are infected with Zika is growing. On July 29th, four people were found north of Miami who tested positive for Zika virus, and they did not have identifiable travel. That's up to 14 people who have had locally transmitted, U.S. transmitted Zika cases. Overall, there are 1,658 total cases of Zika in the United States as of July 27th. 15 of them were sexually transmitted. Let me say that again. Of these nearly 1,700 cases, 15 were not contracted from mosquitoes but were sexually transmitted. And sexual transmission turns out to be possible
long after we thought the virus was cleared. And so this is the basis of the CDC's new recommendations for sexual abstinence or for barrier methods. And we are talking about oral sex as well as other sexual modes in order to avoid getting Zika from your sexual partner. U.S. military families, 41 military members, including one pregnant woman, have been infected while overseas. And again, most of the damage with the Zika virus, this is something that 80% of people don't even realize they have symptoms. If you do have symptoms, you may have a rash, some joint aches, you may feel like you have the flu. If you travel to South or Central America to a Zika zone and you get the flu, you should be tested. If you travel and you don't get symptoms, you should avoid having sex with your partner who may become pregnant for at least 8 weeks after travel. So let's go through that. Again, currently there is a domestic travel ban for a one-mile area within Miami, but we at Health Matters are skeptical. We think that there are other potential areas along the U.S. Gulf Coast. Testing available for any patient who requests it, and testing will speed up. Right now, it's still somewhat of a difficult prospect being tested for Zika, but this should improve. And there is a new version coming out. You'll like this, Rick. Zika prevention kits available for patients. You can build your own Zika kit. Here's what it has. It has a bed net, standing water treatment tablets, insect repellent, permethrin spray, and condoms. Now, not very often you will pack that together in a bag, but that's your Zika kit, according to Medscape, the CDC as well. CDC guidance, all pregnant women should be evaluated every visit. Have you been to a Zika area? Has anyone that you are having sex with been to a Zika area? This is very important. If you are asymptomatic, you have no symptoms at all, but you have an ongoing risk, they recommend blood testing just to be sure. If your sex partner has traveled to or lives in an area that has Zika transmission, you should abstain from sex for the duration of the pregnancy or use barrier methods for the duration of the pregnancy. If you're not pregnant, if you might be planning to be pregnant, if the man has been to the Zika area, you should abstain from sex for 6 weeks. And if the woman has been and might be infected 8 weeks after illness onset. And again, 8 weeks after a partner has traveled, if you don't have any symptoms. So we're getting very serious. There are two ways this can be transmitted: mosquitoes and sexual activity. And sexual abstinence for a period of 6 to 8 weeks, depending again on circumstances, is recommended. So check with your doctor on that. Realize that this will be transmitted over the United States. That's our sponsor, the Zika Update. Rick, I got a couple of things. First of all, I have a cousin who I'm okay with. This guy lives in Arkansas. He's a pretty straight-up guy. Okay. He got a chainsaw and was a tree had fallen and just down the street, one of his neighbors, and he was cutting it up, and he got some a chip or some sawdust in his eye and got an abrasion of his eye.
So he wasn't wearing eye protection?
He was not, because it fell, and they asked him if he would help, and so he just grabbed the chainsaw.
That's a good excuse?
No. It is. Well, again, he got a corneal abrasion. I'm sure he has now paid for his lack of preparation. Again, we at Health Matters recommend eye protection for anybody that's using a chainsaw or circumstances where stuff that might kick up and injure your eye. I, in fact, am stupid, and so I wear eye protection at all times. I gave up contacts as an intern, and I have been wearing glasses since, not because they are comfortable or not because they don't fog up when I go outside.
But they make you look so distinguished.
But because I seem to stick things in my eye on a regular basis, and I need all the help I can get. Well, this was a Cochrane review, and the Cochrane people, this is a international group that reviews questions to try to get what we would call the final answer. They look at all the research on an issue, and the question is, should you patch? Should my cousin have gone to the doctor to get an eye patch? And this is embarrassing. First of all, I knew about this review. It was published August 3rd, but his mother told him that maybe he could make his own eye patch. And I mean, right. You know, pirates have had a rough time.
Right.
Nobody plays pirates anymore.
Right.
They play space aliens or whatever, but nobody. And you think about it, most of the shooter games, and I'm looking now at our young gaming producer, I would say very rarely are you shooting pirates. There is not many video games where you shoot pirates. Pirates have just sort of disappeared from
I don't understand, because
culture.
You know, with Pirates of the Caribbean, that was a very popular movie series. You would have think that would have brought back pirates.
Yeah.
But then again, who fights the pirates?
Yeah. The British Navy. And who cares about them?
Yeah, who wants
who
to be the British?
Who cares about the British
if
Navy?
If you got to pick sides, you're going to be the pirate.
Yeah, because they were...
So there's nobody to kill them.
Americans, you know. I mean, John Paul Jones was somewhat pirate-esque.
Well, but there's nobody to go after the pirates because nobody wants to be the British.
Now, Rick, I got to confess, though, I grew up in the Davy Crockett craze.
You got one of those?
I had a coonskin cap at one time. I was too young. It wasn't any good because my parents... couldn't afford a good one, but I had something like that. But maybe pirates will come back. But you're right. Pirates of the Caribbean's gone. And the final thing here, let me just get to the chase on this research since we've sort of wandered off. Overall, the evidence that your corneal abrasion will heal better with eye patching is not compelling. At 24 hours, people who receive patches were actually a little less likely to be healed than those who didn't receive patches. When you go at 48 and 72 hours, they're identical. Healing time, overall, a little bit longer, 0.14 days longer on average if you actually wore an eye patch. Pain rating similar, that is, the eye patch doesn't improve the pain, and it itself is a pain to maintain. When you look at things like tearing, light sensitivity, blurred vision, foreign body sensation, complication rates, similar. People without patches got more antibiotic eye drops and eye drops in general than people with patches, because if you're patched, you can't use eye drops because the patch blocks you from doing. But other than that, this is what they said. Patching of the eye is not useful for the treatment of simple traumatic corneal abrasions. Now, most people in emergency rooms already know this, but I was surprised. This is the way my in-laws do, is they ask my opinion, and I say, no, I don't think he needs to patch it. He needs to keep a close eye on it. I actually said that. And I think it'd be a good idea to visit an optometrist, an ophthalmologist, and just get it stained and looked at, but I do not believe he needs a patch, whereupon they promptly ignore me and said, well, you could probably make your own patch. It's the weekend. It's inconvenient to see an eye doctor. Why don't you just kind of put together a patch, because patches are critical to healing a corneal abrasion, and they're not. They are not.
Yeah, but part of me, even though you are, in fact, the medical professional here, have you had a corneal abrasion? You're staring into the abyss tells me it's either been a long time or it wasn't memorable.
Well, I wear glasses all the time just to protect
me. So, Tony, I have, and I haven't always wore glasses. I got a corneal abrasion about 15, 18 years ago. I still remember it. It ruined... a few days while it healed.
It's not fun.
And let's be honest, the patch didn't make it heal faster. What the patch did was kept me from blinking. It kept me from looping.
I love that, and that's a good thing. Well, Rick's not blinking.
Well,
that's
you know what I mean. I mean, to blink your eye hurt.
Yeah, I understand
it
what
hurt.
You're saying.
It's like when somebody, when you got an injury and somebody says, don't make me laugh, and you make them laugh.
Right. Well, let me go through this. You know, this was my cousin was not going to the emergency room, but what they can do, and this is the good part, is they can actually put a contact lens on. And that sounds like the worst thing to do, but you can actually put a contact lens on and protect that part from the discomfort of blinking.
Yeah, because every time I would blink, it would be discomfort, and it would start cars at the water, right? So, I mean,
then you
blink and then you cry, then you got to blink more. I mean, it was this perpetuating thing that I believe I was happy to have the patch because it forced my eye to stay closed.
Fair enough. But
so yeah, you can take all that medical lingo, you want. But
lingo jingo. You were going to say lingo jingo.
The fact is,
I don't know what that means.
Take my eye shut or give me a patch.
Okay.
But don't tell me I don't need it.
Okay. Contact lens or an anesthetic can do a similar thing. You do not have to have a patch for healing. And so you work this out. I do think that
you
it is a good
potato.
Idea. It is, okay, it is your vision. And my recommendation, my strong recommendation, my recommendation is that you should get it looked at if you feel you have a corneal abrasion. And there are some things you can do. The thing... engineering a homemade eye patch is not one of the best things you can do for corneal abrasion. And this sort of shows you the stock that I come from and my wife's family come from is the fact that we're having this conversation. Yeah, you could just, just make your own eye patch.
Get half a pound of gauze and some duct tape, and we can make this work.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Tony, we do it right. I can give you a headband and an eye patch on the same...
And we're ready for Halloween. And there we are, just in time. Okay, this was August 9th, and something to talk about. Michael Delp, Florida State University. We love University of Florida, the research they do. I will tell you, Florida State University, this is some interesting research. This is speculative. This is not the absolute last word, but it was fascinating. July 28th, published in Scientific Reports, a theory. They looked at the 24 Apollo astronauts who had gone to the moon. A unique group of people. These are the only people, we believe, in the history of our planet, other than some people, well,
only people we know in the history of our planet, who have left the Earth's atmosphere, the Van Allen radiation belts, all those things that that protect the Earth. These people have gone into what we call deep space. So they looked at, there were 35 members of the U.S. Astronaut Corps who had died and had not gone under, not actually left the Earth's atmosphere. They had orbited or whatever, and they looked at the 24 who had gone to the moon, and they looked at why they had died. They compared them to people, non-astronauts of the time, and also they compared non-flight astronauts, all flight astronauts with low Earth orbit, and then the lunar astronauts. And they said, all right, of these people, the ones that had died, how many of them died of heart disease or cardiovascular disease? If you take population sample, ages 55 to 64, over 300,000 people, 27% of those people who died, died from cardiovascular disease. Non-flight astronauts, trained, stayed on Earth, should be equivalent, 9% of those died of cardiovascular disease, one-third the rate of the general public. Because astronauts, let's face it, they're healthy, they're educated, all those things. If you look at Apollo lunar astronauts, keep in mind, 9% are non-flight astronauts, 27% of the U.S. population died of cardiovascular disease, 43% of the Apollo lunar astronauts died of heart disease. That is 4.5 times the non-flight astronauts. That is almost, it's 1.5 times U.S. population.
Can you take the U.S. population and segregate them into risk takers, right? Risky behavior, risky.
Right.
Risky, I mean, an astronaut doesn't sign up because they think they're going to live a long life.
Right. So, again, look at non-flight astronauts, 9% cardiovascular death. Look at all flight astronauts, flight and non-flight, 17%. Low Earth orbit astronauts, 11%. Apollo lunar astronauts, among that group, 43%. So either they were selected in such a way that it favored risk takers and lifestyle, or there's something about going to the moon that's really hard on your heart.
Let's be honest, the Apollo lunar missions were limited in numbers, right? So you got a much smaller sample size.
Yes.
You've got probably much different technology. And on top of that, we were still trying to get astronauts back then that were, at best, you know, test pilots, right? So these are the people who fly planes that have never flown before.
All right, now hold that thought because it gets interesting here. First of all, death from cancer, pretty much identical. General population, 34%. Non-flight astronauts, 29%. All flight astronauts, 31%. Low Earth orbit, 31%. Apollo, 29%. It's a wash. It's the same thing. Cancer did not seem to matter, which is kind of odd. You think, well, you get out there going to the moon, you're going to be exposed to a lot of radiation and things. That's not the deal. Now, death from accidents, which is where you're going. The general population, ages 55 to 64, 5% of them died from accidents.
Right.
Non-flight astronauts, 53%.
Yeah. So it's a risk taker.
They are
nature.
Risk taker. Now, what's interesting, though, is if you look at the Apollo lunar astronauts, 14% death from accidents.
Double the normal population.
Double the normal population,
almost
but nowhere near.
Times.
Apparently, if you're a bad astronaut, and my apologies, if you or someone you love was a
they
non-flight
lost their
astronaut.
Flight status for a reason, Tony.
But
come
if
on.
You did not actually fly in a flight, you were an astronaut that did not make that final cut, apparently you were careless. I mean, that is just you could fly fast, but you didn't pay attention to the switch, and so you didn't make the moon landing, and you're going to die of accidents. But you look at that then, what you've got is non-flight astronauts, 53% death of accidents, Apollo lunar astronauts, 14% of accidents. Now, it's only seven of them. It's only seven of them.
It's a small sample size.
It is a small sample, but the Apollo lunar astronauts, of those seven, 43% died of heart disease. And so they speculate. Now, here's the other thing they did. They looked at weightlessness and cosmic ray exposure in rats, and they found some evidence that it made a difference in their the linings of their blood vessels. The cells were more dysfunctional. So they say, we've got a mechanism, and we also have statistics. The thing is, if we are thinking about going to Mars, we have to think about this, you know, about the effects of it. And frankly, you know, the fact that this is new information as of August 2016, the health effects of long-term health effects of the Apollo moonshot, something to think about.
Yeah, but don't you think the impact and the actual stress, I mean, there's so many more things to worry about on our first mission to Mars, especially a manned mission, that to me, the longevity stuff has got a factor lower in the list. But that's probably for another time.
I suspect if you accelerate heart disease, if you can guarantee those astronauts get to Mars and get back, that would be a very successful
That's going to be in the top 10 things to worry about.
Get us off the air, Rick.
Special thanks to our Summer Moorhead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or just visit us on Facebook, do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember that Health Matters is much like the 10-year-old human papillomavirus vaccine.
For many years, scientific researchers have demonstrated that Health Matters and HPV DNA are found in cervical cancers.
The FDA approved the first HPV vaccine in June 2006. Health Matters has never been approved by the FDA.
In 2011, Minnesota Representative Michelle Bachmann claimed that HPV could cause mental disabilities. While HPV has not been proven to cause mental disabilities, Health Matters is widely known to cause mental disabilities.
In June 2013, the CDC reported that HPV infection dropped by 56% among teenage girls since the vaccination was approved by the FDA. Health Matters has still never been approved by the FDA.
Use of HPV among adolescents is disappointingly low. It's only 57% in girls and 35% in boys. Health Matters is also disappointingly low in both women and men.
The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommends vaccinating both boys and girls at age 11 or 12 years. Girls can be vaccinated up to age 26, boys up to age 21 if they have not been vaccinated previously. The committee has no recommendations on Health Matters.
HPV is the most frequently refused vaccine in the U.S., and Health Matters is the most frequently refused radio show.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get your children vaccinated. Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week as Rick and I track and field your questions with another Olympic marathon on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.